You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Curtain up, theater people, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket. Coming to you from the Hell's Kitchen area of Midtown Manhattan, right smack dab in the middle of Broadway. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make those happen. As many of you may know, and if you're a newbie to theater, then let me explain it to you. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater and some smaller, more intimate productions. And it's these works that we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of those productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. I love theater and see as much as I can wherever I go. During the travels of the production of my husband and my play, At the Flash, I've met many wonderful people from all over the world in the theater community, and it is my honor to bring them on as guests to the show. And tonight's guest will be sensational international stage manager, the dynamic ever in charge, and boy do I mean that, Jessica Varela. We'll be bringing Jessica on in just a few minutes, but first I'd like to take a moment to discuss a fun, interesting sort of dichotomous theater day I recently have. Now, last Friday, I went to two theater, like opposing theater events in one day, that show a really, really broad range of how theater can be produced. And it sort of like dawned on me as I was just transferring from one show to another as I walked from one to the other here in New York City. In the afternoon, I was invited to a public reading of a new play called Daddy. My friend Ellen Margulies actually invited me to this. Now, Ellen is kind of like a total theater nerd like me, and she loves like finding out all these smaller productions and readings and stuff, so she's great. So she always invites me, and I try to go as much as possible. Anyway, Daddy is a new play written by a playwright named Jeremy O. Harris, who is in his first year at Yale School of Drama for playwriting. It was a really, really good script, and I enjoyed it. It's the story of a guy who meets an older guy and how his mother actually reacts to all of that. So it was fun. It was a small reading of about 40 people that were in attendance, and it was in this large sort of room built into a theater. Now, there are a lot of these that I'm discovering in New York City where, like, you'll see this big building that has, like, I don't know, a liquor store on the bottom of it or a Whole Foods or a dry cleaners. And like you go into this entrance and you go up three floors and there's like this room with this giant theater with a curtain and seats. And it's pretty wild. But it was really neat to see that because typically readings like this are the beginning of the journey of a play or excuse me, or at least early on. And then later in the evening, I went with my husband to see the newest production of Sunday in the Park with George by Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine. Now, this is the production that, if you really dig theater and follow it a lot, is with Jake Gyllenhaal, the movie star, as George, and Annalee Ashford, who is she's a TV actor, but she's most known in Broadway, and she's just phenomenal as the character of Dot, who actually is also – she also plays a character named – Marie in the second act. There's an association between the two characters that you have to sort of see to understand. And it's a musical imagining the process of the creation of the painting A Sunday Afternoon on the Island of La Grande Jatte by French painter Georges Seurat. And I, of course, thought this, and you will probably now all of a sudden see it in your head as I say this, I thought this painting was called Sunday in the Park with George for a long time until my husband was like, no, that's not what it's called. This show itself goes way back to 1984 with production with Mandy Patinkin and Bernadette Peters, and it was like a huge hit. It won the Pulitzer Prize that year, and I could see why. It's just such a wonderful, wonderful show. It's about like writing and artistry and artistic blocks and painting and family. I mean, it's just about like a million things. It's great. Subsequent productions have occurred since that one, but the one that we saw was inspired by a stage reading of the show with those two lead actors at the New York City Center Theater back in 2016. Now, I've talked about the City Center Theater a couple times in the show, and it's a very, very cool establishment. I've seen like small productions there, and then recently I actually went and saw a big production of a show called Big River, which is really good, and they have this gigantic theater there. Like, I had no idea. I'm like, oh my God, this theater is here, and I just thought it was these two little theaters. I learned so much as I see one from one show to another. But anyways, they did this reading where they were on stage with the orchestra behind them, and some of them had scripts in front of them, and they actually sang and did the whole show while they were reading it out of scripts. And so everyone loved it so much that a bunch of people came in and backed it and paid for Jake Gyllenhaal and Anna Lee to come in and do the show. It was wonderful. But my point is that if you ever have the chance where you can see a couple of different shows in one day, try to do that. Try to go see something that's really small with, like, I don't know, 20 people in the audience, or it's just a reading or something experimental like that, and then go see a big show. And you will really see the process of evolution of theater. It's really interesting how it all works, and so many people don't understand that big show that you're seeing on Broadway has evolved from probably reading it in somebody's living room 5 years beforehand, particularly if it's a musical, because those take a long time to produce. So anyways, those are my opening remarks, and I hope that means something to you, and I hope that you will go out and do that someday. By the way, if you want to see the actual painting, a Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grande Jatte, it's on view at the Art Institute of Chicago. So you can just, wherever you are, take a plane over to Chicago, which is a wonderful theater city in general, and you can go to the Art Institute, and it's there. And the cool thing about this painting is that it's all done with dots. It's like Georges Seurat painted with dots, and he would paint various different colors of a certain thing, so that your eye would be deceived into translating it into the color that it normally combines. It's a beautiful piece. So anyways, go see that and see a big show and a small show in one day. You'll thank me for that. Speaking of Chicago, I want to bring out our guest who just happens to be Chicago based. She is a brilliant, amazing international stage manager. By international, I know this firsthand, the lovely Jessica Ferrella. Hi, Jessica, and welcome to your program, Is Your Ticket.
Hi, Sean. I'm not sure if you can hear a blush via podcast, but that's a very kind introduction.
and it's very deserved, too. Jessica is amazing. This is how I the story that I tell to describe her. Now, I say that Jessica was the very, very first stage manager of a full production of David and My play at the Flash. And it was back in like 2012. And she is amazing. Like, she is always in charge. And in addition, that was the run we did in Chicago. And then after that, we did a run in Dublin, which is why I say Jessica's international. That's my experience of Jessica being international. And which, you know, hey, I say I'm an international playwright, so why not?
Well, if you're an international playwright, then I'm an international stage manager, and I'll take it.
Deal. Well, when we were in Ireland, we had like one day to do a full tech rehearsal. And then I think we had to go in and David had to do the show that night, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was the day after we flew in. So we flew basically overnight, had like an afternoon, and then that next morning we had to tech the show and then perform that evening was opening.
Right, and we had to do it after another show.
Yep.
Yeah, it was wild, but so we're sitting there at that one tech rehearsal, like, you know, and I'm all jet lagged and I'm barely staying awake. And Jessica is up there just, you know, I don't want to say ordering people around, just giving very, very assertive and strong directives to these people that we had barely met. You know, she's like, reinforce the stage there, and I need that light moved over here, and does somebody have a ladder? And I'm thinking, wow, she's so great. And then later on that night, after we do the show, David and I, you know, because we're old, we go back and go, you know, we're sleeping. And we find out that Jessica's out partying with those exact same people and getting to know and becoming BFFs with all those girls. It was great.
Well, they were incredible. They were really remarkable. We lucked out that festival because we, the theater we were sharing, because all of the shows had two different shows running at the same time, sort of one early slot, one late slot. And we were sharing a theater with, I think they're called the Out Theater Community or Theater Company in Dublin. And so it was their home theater. So they knew the space and they knew what was there and what the options were. And so we just worked together really, really well. And also they were delightful people. So why not?
Wonderful. They're those some of the nicest people I have ever met, and completely supportive and really selfless in their generosity.
Absolutely. Yeah, also hilarious. Their show was amazing.
Oh yeah, yeah. They absolutely. And we actually keep in touch with two of the guys there, and I think I'm going to bring them on the show. They came out here to New York, I think about 4 months ago, and we had dinner, and they're wonderful. So that's just how I describe Jessica. She just has one of those personalities. It's just it's lovely, and it's completely suitable for theater. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you.
What with the giving my dedicating my life to it, that I am suited for it, is good to hear.
Right. It's a
cool
bonus.
Made the right choice.
Exactly. Well, speaking of that, tell us a little bit about yourself and your creative theater passion.
Well, because I'm a stage manager, I creative is always sort of a sideways word for me. Cause I've been a stage manager since I was 12. And so I don't really directly make any of the art. I don't do any of the creating, but I facilitate all of the art. I think of myself as a craftsman as opposed to an artist, which I think is a really important distinction. But I you know, knew since forever that like I needed to be in the room and part of the conversation and engaged artistically, because I tried to play musical instruments, it did not work. I can't carry a tune in a bucket. I shouldn't sing any of those things. I would love to be expressive creatively, but that's just not, doesn't seem to be my avenue. So the way that I get to do that is to sort of be the stage manager in the room and sort of make sure that everybody's vision and be part of the conversation about what the vision is and sort of make it come to fruition. And so that's sort of the theoretical journey for creativity for me.
Huh.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, but you are creating, though.
I mean, I replicate, you know, and that sounds denigrating, and I don't mean it that way. The best sort of comparative example, and I think I might have told you this before, is Anthony Bourdain makes a reference in one of his books about the difference between an executive chef and a sous chef. So the executive chef makes the dish once, and they, you know, they figure out why everything is on there, and they make that dish one time, and then it's the sous chef's job to make it 1,000 times exactly the same, but it's also the sous chef's job to understand everything there is to know about the dish, like why there's broccoli on it. Is it important? Because like sometimes you run out of broccoli. Like I told you earlier, I had five understudies go on this the show I had yesterday. You've got to know why things are happening where they're happening so that when something comes up, you can make that adjustment. So, I mean, I suppose you could call it creating in that way, but it's sort of facilitating and recreating the art. Like I said, the executive chef is your artist and your sous chef is your craftsman. So you repeat that over and over and over again. And you know so much about why you're doing what you're doing that when something comes up, you can make the adjustment.
Yeah. I often tell people that you know At the Flash better than probably I do at this point. David, Jessica, David, Zach, and then Sean.
Well, I mean, but you did that great thing that a writer can do, because I've worked on so many new pieces. Chicago's really great for developing new work. It's one of the things I love most about this theater community. And there's always a really interesting balance of a playwright in the room or not. Now, obviously, we've always got David in the room because he's performing, but he detaches pretty well. He sort of puts actor mode on.
Right.
But you know, having the playwright in the room for part of the process is important, but then having the playwright not in the room for another part of the process is kind of equally important in a developmental sort of way, in an exploratory sort of way. And you can sort of come up with ideas and notions and pull together sort of the what and the why of this piece as it speaks to you directly, as opposed to what the playwright intended, and then compare and contrast those things. So I think you did a really good job of participating just the right amount. And so that did take you out of the room. I was there more hours than you were, you know, that's just the math of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was you who told me that there's a journey of a play when it comes to the various roles. It's the playwright comes in and puts their vision down on paper, and then they give that to the director, who then expands it even more so, and then that's given to the actors, who expand that even more. Wasn't you who told me that?
I mean, I'll take credit for it because it sounds really good, but I don't remember specifically it being me. But I mean, that's absolutely true. And then add in the layers of designers and, you know, and then your crew and the way that people work on it, because we're along the way, you take an idea and a vision and all of that. I keep using the word vision, and it's such an awkward word because it can mean nothing. But also, if you do mean it, if you have it there, if it's really there, if you, as the playwright, as the director, all the steps along the way actually have an idea of what it is you're trying to say, then that is exactly what it is. Then it is a vision. But you take that vision and sort of add pieces to it as you go along, and then it's left in the hands and the care of the actor and your stage manager and your actors, however many people are in your show, and your crew and your dressers and your everybody. And I think that's sort of the incredible journey that a play can take. Like I said, getting stuff from new work into full production is a remarkable experience.
Oh yeah, it is. Now, I know that you are pretty, you can be selective about the projects that you take now. What messages and themes do you strive to convey to audiences through the projects that you choose?
I have gotten this amazing opportunity over the course of the last year to spend almost my entire season, last two seasons worth of shows in rooms that were incredibly diverse, which was really, really important to me. And a great opportunity that sort of came up and then I fostered, and then, or vice versa. I've done, a lot of work with a lot of women. I've done a lot of work with a lot of people of color, both behind, you know, and that's both behind the table and on stage, you know what I mean? And I think that's been really, really incredible. These diverse spaces that I get to spend my day in. And it's incredible, and you get to learn so much, and you get to tell these incredibly important stories, and that's been a great opportunity for me.
What sort of criterion do you have for selecting a project? Is there anything is there any sort of red flag where you go, no, I'm not gonna do that?
I mean, I'm not going to pretend I sit here with like a fine tooth comb. The biggest criteria for me is where it fits in my schedule and what it means I can do, what other opportunities I have. But for me, it's about the people I get to work with. You know what I mean? There's always the balance between the people and the project. And if you can get both your, you know, your you're golden. If it's an important story to tell, if it's if it's either new or a new re-envisioning of something, you know, I do a lot of musicals and you're going to have to convince me why we need to tell the story of Oklahoma again. If that's coming up on my, like, you got to tell me why. I'm sorry. But on the flip side, if the right people are in the room, if these are people I can learn from and participate in conversations with and, you know, grow as a human, I've been doing this job for a really long time. And so to be able to get and give, to have that exchange of thoughts and ideas and concepts about theater and all of that, as highfalutin as that sounds, but like also fun,
right?
Is really, really important for me.
Well, the stage manager is the go between. They're like the middle point person between the cast and creatives and the crew as well. So it's really important to have cool people.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think is an important direction theater is taking right now, based upon what you're seeing out there?
I think to reiterate, you know, the stories that need to be told thing. One of the other jobs I have besides, I'm a equity freelance stage manager. That's sort of my main job, but you know, girls got to eat. So I have other jobs. And the main other job that I have is I'm the production coordinator at the Piven Theater Workshop, which is in Evanston, right outside Chicago. So part of the Chicago theater community. And our season this season is called the Women's Voices Project, which is incredibly important and really, really fascinating. The number of different ways that we've gotten to do that. Our main stage production for this year is a show called Dance for Beginners. And the content of the story is lovely and pleasant and interesting. And I mean, it's just a delightful three person piece. And it's a great, great tale, but it's also, written by a woman who, has been workshopping the show for a while. And she workshopped it with us, as one of our lab productions, last August, I think. And then we were able to develop it and now are able to put it on as a full production. And we've got a female director and we've got, you know, we've just got these, women with a voice and a vision and something to say, and they get to say it on stage, which is really great. And I think that's sort of one of the pieces that theater gets to do these days.
Oh, definitely. Theater is often the mouthpiece for societal issues and ills and advances.
And yeah, I mean, I think at this point, not to get hyper political, but I think all art is important because we're in a culture and where we're at risk of pretending that we don't need it, you know, and even cutting NIH grants and school art programs and music programs and all of that, and just the idea of art being a core part of what makes the people in our civilization worth it, mm-hmm. I think is real relevant. And then getting to add on top of that, that it's everybody, you know what I mean? That it's not just the people who've gotten to tell the stories before, the people that have the access, that you want to give access to writers of color or queer writers or trans writers or women writers or all of that. And then across the board, from writers to directors to choreographers to actors, et cetera, that it's all really important to make sure that everyone's voices are heard.
Oh, definitely. And one of the advantages that I'm hearing that you have is because stage managers are generally their own agents. They're what I would call them freelance.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you don't have to sort of pigeonhole yourself into any particular cause or vision or direction. Like I've interviewed a couple artistic directors and executive directors of theater companies, and they really have to create or put on theater that is specific to the mission statement of their organization. But with you, you can sort of dabble in all of these, I don't want to say causes, but themes and stories.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think it makes me, this is going to sound terribly corny. Why do you make me sound so corny all the time, Sean? It makes me both a better stage manager and a better person. I think the more, and I went to, there's this thing that Chicago Actors Equity Association does called the stage management speed interviews, which are great, but also the most awkward thing that anyone ever does ever.
Oh,
it's basically professional speed dating. It's terrible. So you go into a room with 12 copies of your resume in your hand, and there are 12 production managers or producers from different companies around the city sitting at tables, and you sit and talk to them each for 5 minutes. And 5 minutes, and then somebody says it's time, and you stand up and you move to the next one, and it's ridiculous. But like, I've made some really good contacts. I've been doing it for a couple of years. It's a great community building event. It's, you know, now there's 12 more people that have my resume, and I've had a chat with about the shows I've gotten to work on and all of that. So I've had this conversation a number of times over the when I did those. And I think that one of the things that makes me good at my job is that I try to do as much different kind of theater, as many different kinds of theater as possible. And that's both in the actual context of it and also in the content of it. So like, I do straight plays, I do musicals, I do new works, I do established things, you know what I mean? I'm doing the Scottsboro Boys, which is a 13-person musical, a really, really important, fascinating, incredibly difficult story. And then I moved, the next show that I'm doing is two one-man shows in rep, or one's a woman and one's a man, but one-person show in rep with one another. And those are straight plays versus, like, so you can barely get more disparate than that in terms of context, you know, in terms of how those stories are being told. And then, but the content of the stories is, you know, it's the story of the Scottsboro Boys is part of our American history that we don't talk about, that we don't have that conversation. And then the story of the one-man shows I'm doing is, it's called, I don't actually know a lot about the other ones. I'm going to not talk about that one, but it's called A Little Bit Not Normal. And it's about dealing with, you know, I think, as I understand, I could be totally wrong, but the information I have is about dealing with sort of mental illness diagnosis and stuff like that. And what sort of the relative perspective and person's journey. And so both of those are untold stories, but they're untold stories from wildly different perspectives and also told in incredibly different ways. And I think that as a stage manager, the more you get to do different things, the more sort of tools you have in your tool belt, so you know what the right thing to use for any given moment is. And I think that kind of applies for people too.
You work on such a wide range of shows. You work on big shows. You work on really small shows. I know that you've worked. There was the Star Wars.
It was a burlesque show called The Empire Brings Sexy Back. It was great. It was super fun.
Oh, yeah. David went and saw it and brought his best friend Donald, who loves Star Wars, and they absolutely loved it. And Jessica knows how I feel about nudity on stage. For some reason, I'm like a total – I get like a four-year-old. I'm like, I don't know where to look. Do I look at it? Do I look away? I just get way too nervous. But
it's a burlesque show. You're allowed to look.
Oh no! I get really weirded out. I can't handle it. I'm just a big baby when it comes to that. Now, one of the things that we like to do is talk about smaller productions here on your program as your ticket. What do you think is the best part of being involved with smaller shows?
There's so many good parts. There's also, you know, a lot of work involved, but I enjoy that part too. I think that my favorite part is probably the part when you MacGyver it. You know what I mean? You figure out how to fix the thing or attack the problem with like duct tape and a safety pin. And sometimes it actually is duct tape and a safety pin, and sometimes it's a creative edit on a script or something to fix a problem that you have. Because one of the things about smaller theater is that very often, you know, the people in the room at the time are it. There's nobody else to call in. There's no money to pay anyone to do anything else. And you have to turn it up. You have to figure out what's the solution.
You know, it's funny because I had Melissa Young on the show a couple shows ago, and she said she calls it theater on $5.
Yeah, there you go.
Where she says, you know, she'll be like, I can't believe, I know you only had $5, and how did you get that gorgeous gown that actress is wearing? And with only $5. Yeah. So I thought that
was impressive as hell. It's incredible.
And I have seen Jessica Ferrella's rig that she carries around with her. Jessica has this gigantic bag filled with stuff. Jessica, give us five different things that you have in that bag that are the most important.
It's a stage manager's kit. It's not that outlandish, and it's just a toolbox. But yes, what do I have in there? I have I've got an umbrella these days because somebody always needs one. General first aid kit stuff, which is always important. A bucket of Advil because everyone likes Advil, or at least the vast majority of people. Mm-hmm. Screwdriver is always really, really helpful. One of those flip it around and it can be both kinds screwdriver. Let's see, you said five. That was three, right?
Uh-huh.
I actually made use of the pair of socks I had in there the other day as somebody was changing into tap shoes and didn't have the right socks on to tap in. So I had a pair of airplane socks, you know, those socks you get on like a long flight where they give you a little packet of weird stuff that sort of is kind of useful and mostly isn't and just sort of ends up in your carry-on somewhere.
Like booty socks, right?
Exactly. So I had one of those and it's like, it goes in my kit. Somebody could use socks. That's fine. And it turned out somebody did. And I personally always make use of the hairbrush that's in there. So that's for my purposes.
Yeah. I don't know if you'd really want to loan your hairbrush to somebody else, but oh, who knows? You never know. I guess that's a trust thing.
Yeah. In a pinch.
Right. I mean, seriously, I think I tried to pick that bag up one time when we were in Dublin and I was like, jeez, I'm going to break my shoulder having to carry this around. Yeah. Jessica's badass. You really are, honey.
Well, thank you very much, Sean. That's much appreciated.
Oh, well, and I mean it too. I mean, anyone who could lug that bag around from, you know, 6-7 blocks like I've seen you do.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What should every theatrical artist, stage technician, director, writer, composer, actor be doing right now to be relevant and successful in the industry?
I mean, it's always about the hustle. You got to keep working. You got to keep auditioning, all of that. But I think it's also right this moment about listening. You know what I mean? We were talking a lot about earlier about different kinds of stories and the opportunity to tell them. And what happens is very often as theater artists, we spend a lot of time wanting to tell our story and don't bother listening to anyone else's. Mm. And that sells ourselves short. You know what I mean? We as a community can collectively do this, and you can learn from what people are putting on stage and why is it there and what's the intent and all of that, and then take that and add that to your story.
That's a very, very interesting answer. I know that I feel like writers are like that. I often say that I try to be more interested in other people than I am in myself.
For sure.
So you're saying that really should transfer over into actors. And I think directors are like that too, because they sort of reflect that back onto stage.
I think the best of everyone is like that. And I think maybe a lot of us try real hard to do that, but sometimes we fall short. So mm-hmm. Pay attention to what you're listening to and how you're listening and what you're taking from it.
Oh, well, that's great advice. That's actually a new one out of the, I think you're my sixth show, and that's really good. That's smart. Now, besides Scottsboro Boys and your 2 one-person shows, is there anything else that you've been working on that you want to talk about?
Oh goodness. My season for next year is still up in the air. I'm not sure what's on the agenda. All of our Piven stuff is really, really exciting right now. I've got a couple weeks off in between shows. So one Scottsboro closes next week. And then before I go into tech for, St. Jude and a little bit Not Normal, I've got a lot of work to do on production managing all of what's going on at Piven. So we've got our improv series coming up, which is called Anytime, Anywhere, which we've added a storytelling element to this year, which I'm really excited about. So as part of the Women's Voices project, we've added this whole team, I think it's 22 or some ridiculous number of female storytellers who are going to be part of the festival over the course of like half a dozen, eight different days. So we've got one day that's entirely improv and one day that's entirely storytelling. And then all of the rest of the days, programming is sort of interspersed and mixed together, which is going to be a lot of fun. So I've got to coordinate a lot of humans to do that coming up soon, which is going to be a good time. And then we're also, like I said, in pre-production for Dance for Beginners, which is our main stage show this season, which is going to be also a good time. They actually are just this minute started their promotional photo shoot.
Oh, wow. Cool. That sounds great. Always busy. Always busy. Miss Varela is always busy. Now, since you did such a great job on your speed interviewing as a stage manager, do you want to do a speed round of questions with me?
Sure. Why not? Let's do it.
Okay. Ready? Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay. Favorite play?
Wit.
Favorite musical?
Oh God, that's hard. There's so many. I am going to say, my favorite musical ever is Tommy. That changed my life seeing that show.
Love that show. Favorite writer?
I'm going to Shakespeare.
Okay. Director?
I don't think I have one. I don't honestly know a lot. I mean, aside from people I get to work with personally, and if I get to pick one of those, I'm going to Brenda Didier. She's incredible. She did my run of In the Heights and Amos Behaven that I've done. And just watching her in the room is fascinating. And she is real good. Other than that, I don't know like not professional, but famous directors and all. That's not something I'm familiar with.
Okay. Mentor.
I made up stage management. Like almost every good stage manager I know made it up themselves, but you then sort of take it and have a conversation with someone else about it. I could call the very first person who handed me a prompt book in high school, which is a teacher I had by the name of Len Borave, who was great. He was a theater tech and pottery professor and directed a bunch of our shows and was our TD and stuff like that, along with a teacher by the name of Mark Lucas. And he, when I was in ninth grade, I was a child, and he hands me a prompt book and he says, take notes. And I said, what kind of notes? He says, take notes. And I said, what kind of notes? And he says, take notes. And I said, okay. And then I took notes and I took all of the notes there were to take. And I, you know, figured out what was going on and what everyone needed and that I was really good at this and it was fun. So, you know, yay.
Jessica is an outstanding note taker. One last story about Jessica. I know this because during the initial run of At the Flash, I asked you if I could sit in the booth with you four or five times. And I was watching, and not only were you up there calling the show, not calling the show, you were up there firing light cues and firing sound cues, and At the Flash has a lot. But while you were doing it, you were there making notes and then erasing notes and I was like, oh my God, she's so great. But I remember you said to me, this makes me feel kind of weird that somebody's in here. And I thought, something tells me I'm going to need this experience. Jessica Farella taught me how to do sound, or at least fire sound, for a show. And that came in handy because I had to do it at a church performance that we did. And then last year at a show that Jessica came and saw, I had to do it at our run of Fringe, because we only had you have two times the amount of two times the length of your show for a tech and then one complete run through so that the stage manager or the house manager can time it. So
that is not a lot of minutes.
No. So we had, the lady who was up there doing the lights, she's like, I knew she couldn't do sound. So I had to get up there in the booth with her and fire off sound cues. So
yeah. Cause there are a ton of cues in At the Flash. It's like a dance. It's real fun.
Yes, it is. And it's all coordinated with David, who's on stage. So, so I have to say, when it comes to being a stage manager, you are my mentor.
Aw, that's darling, Sean. Thanks.
And Jessica doesn't get corny for many people, just so you know that. So I consider myself lucky. Well, thank you so much for being with us on your program.
Is your ticket. My pleasure.
This is like really, really delightful and such a good – it's different from what we normally discuss, and I think a lot of people are really interested in it. So you were sensational.
Awesome. My pleasure.
Well, I'd like to give shout-outs to current shows that I've really enjoyed recently and want to recommend. And the one that I want to talk about on this show is called The Gravedigger's Lullaby. And this is a play that's out here in New York City. It is running off-Broadway. And it's by my pal, who's one of the nicest and most talented writers in New York City, Jeff Talbot, who I think his most well-known work, which was done in Chicago as well, is a play called The Submission, which is like a searingly good, good, controversial play. But this is much different. It's very mellow and kind of – it has kind of a light touch with the heavy touches here and there. It's directed by a brilliant director named Jen Thompson, who also directed a play that I saw called Women Without Men at the City Center Theater, and that was – I didn't know if I was going to like it, and it's just about all these women in an Irish schoolhouse, and I loved it, and she's just got a great deft touch. It's part of the Actors Company Theater, also known as TACT. It's part of their current season. It's what's called their mainstay production. It is at the Beckett Theater on Theater Row on 42nd Street, and it's all about the themes are like class division and financial status division and marriage and parenting. I know it sounds kind of like anything that's like Gravedigger sounds like macabre, but it's really not like that. It was just a lovely, terrific, beautiful play. And Jeff is a sensational writer. I'm not going to give any of it away, but I really, really think you should go see it. The show runs until April 1st, and you can learn all about the show and more about the Actors Company Theater on their website. I believe it's tactnyc.org. Yes, that's exactly what it is. And so go visit them and see all about them. They do great, wonderful, terrific shows, and go check out The Gravedigger's Lullaby. Such a wonderful show. It is, like I said, running until April 1st. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. I'd like to thank my guest, the awesome and amazing Jessica Ferrella. If you'd like to give me to give you a shout-out for your show or a show in your area or a mention of your organization, then go to my Facebook page at facebook.com/yourprogramisyourticket. Give me a like and shoot me a message, and I'll be happy to give you the mention. Folks, take a little time to see a show this week. And don't forget to give a smaller show some love. There's a lot of great theater gems out there. So until our next show, good night, theater people, and curtain.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.